Welcome into the Sports Buffoons Podcast. Oh, let's get it going out there, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of the world. Welcome back on in to the Sports Buffoons makeshift studio for this Wednesday with you guys. We're missing Tanner Dawson for the moment, but we got our boy Jason JG. How's it going, my man?
It's going great, man. It's good to be back.
Be back again. You know, a whole another week's worth of sports in the books. So, I mean, and it's that's what the weeks are all about, right? It's just a buildup of all the great things. And didn't KU win another championship?
Yeah, I think they were. Presumably, they went back to back. That's what I was told that they were going to do.
Technically, KU won another basketball championship over the weekend. So, good for you guys that are KU fans out there. So, I'm sure you guys are all excited about that stuff. Personally, I don't care because, I mean, I'm not a KU fan, nor do I watch too much women's basketball. But I saw people out there celebrating, and not to mention they had home court advantage in that game. So, that was pretty cool to see, you know, for the fans out there, I'm sure, because I actually had some friends of my own out in Lawrence to witness the game. So, yeah, imagine that if the Chiefs ever had a situation where they were getting to play their championship Super Bowl at home in Arrowhead, I could see how that would be pretty badass. But otherwise, first and foremost, you guys, before we dive into some draft talk and some NBA talk, what are you sipping on?
Oof, I don't even know. I think it's Wild Turkey, actually.
Wild Turkey, yeah. That's what I got today as well. A little bit of Wild Turkey, a little bit of mix up in there as well. So, best of both worlds in that situation.
You know, I just want to point out the last time that we were at this venue, which is not in Lenexa, by the way, we had an amazing show. It was probably one of the greatest shows that we've ever done. I don't really remember too much about the show, but I heard that it was epic. But unfortunately, I think maybe one of our producers deleted it, so it no longer exists. I want to go back and watch it, though.
Yeah, I feel like at some point after that happened, it's known as the show that never happened. Basically, it did happen, but no one remembers it. And also, it was deleted from existence. So probably for good reason, because it was probably one of the most ridiculous shows of all time. And
I think the authorities got involved, didn't they? Did they not?
There was a lot of liquor going on involved at this household.
It was a great fucking
moment.
Show, so, man.
Yeah, and we are not in Lenexa today, by the way. So Tanner will be back with us next week, of course. And, of course, as you guys know about, we have the NFL draft coming up here in Kansas City. So we'll, of course, be attending to that and getting tons of footage that weekend as well. So we're absolutely excited about that. But guys, I do want to talk about something first to kick it off, and that is some things going on in the NBA. Obviously the NBA playoffs are just around the corner. So, to me, that makes me happy because, you know, I think the regular season of the NBA is too long anyway. I feel like it drags on for so long to where you got all these teams that are in or out, but it's like some of them don't even deserve to be there yet. We got to talk about them anyway. And then we have others who are coming along at the right time. So for me, right now, we're looking at a situation with the Dallas Mavericks, who have seemingly gotten worse since an acquisition was made. You know, this was a team that with Luka Doncic, who went out and destroyed the Suns in the postseason just a year ago, and was kind of a kryptonite in a lot of ways to Phoenix. And now it's like they added pieces, but they got worse. So, Jason, just tell me a little bit about your thoughts on the current state of the Mavs and what it's going to take to get them back, and can they even continue on this going into next season?
So I think if you watch mainstream media, which I'm sure we all do that from time to time, they will tell you that this is an epic failure, that there was word out there that Kyrie and Luka Doncic were just going to be benched for the regular season, and they said it's not going to happen. What we know is that they're a half a game out of the play-in tournament, and so they're not mathematically out just yet, but the narrative that's out there right now is that this is an epic disaster, and that Luka can't make it work with Kyrie. And, you know, they may not make the playoffs this year, okay? So, but if you're not going to make the playoffs this year, I mean, it's not that big of a deal. You haven't had Kyrie that long, okay? So just because it doesn't work out this year doesn't mean it can't work out in the future. And you know, let's be honest here. Luka Doncic hasn't necessarily made it work with anybody. So he had Kristaps Porzingis for a while. He actually did make it work pretty well last year, I thought, with Jalen Brunson. But then they got rid of Jalen Brunson. And so they made it to the Western Conference Finals last year. And then fast forward to this year, they're on the outside looking in. I think looking forward to next year, I think they're going to be just fine. Now, we don't know if Kyrie really wants to stay there, but we do know that unlike the Brooklyn Nets, who never wanted Kyrie, Dallas actually wants him to be there. So maybe that'll hold a little bit of weight with them. If you remember when KD first went to the Nets, that was kind of like the main thing, that it's kind of like, if you want KD, you have to bring in his buddy Kyrie, or it's not going to happen. So the Nets never really wanted Kyrie. He was just kind of that piece to the puzzle that they were going to be forced to add if they wanted Kevin Durant. And so for me, you know, let's give it some time here. I mean, I understand, you know, if it doesn't work out when you've got Kyrie Irving just for like basically half a season, then everybody wants to throw in the towel and just say it was a complete disaster. But, you know, if Kyrie wants to be there next year, I would give it another shot. I think for me, like, you know, Kyrie has proven in his career that he can make it worth, he can make it work with a ball dominant superstar, which is what LeBron James was when he won a championship with Kyrie in the Cavs back in the day. And so I think,
but don't you think Kyrie's evolved over time? You know, since that championship with LeBron, and he was, you know, second fiddle in that situation. I mean, do you not think that Kyrie's kind of evolved to where he feels like he should be the priority number one guy on a team?
I don't think so. I just think that his biggest issue is when he went to the Nets to play with Kevin Durant. I don't really see as Kevin Durant as like a this really great facilitator. Like when you had LeBron James and Kyrie on the Cavs, LeBron is one of the greatest facilitators of all time. And whereas Kevin Durant, he's just there. He's a baller, man. He's a scorer, and that's what Kyrie is. And I don't think, you know, what do they have, like 8 to 10 or 11 games when the big three were there, when they had James Harden, and James Harden just wanted to get out of there. And so I don't really think Kyrie has changed that much. I do think that going forward for next year, if Kyrie stays, like Luka Doncic is going to just have to come off the ball a little bit more. I don't like the fact that they got rid of Jalen Brunson, but you know, I think for next year they can make it work. But Luka Doncic just can't be like this super like ball dominant player, because that's not what works with Kyrie. I think Kyrie needs his opportunities as well. And so, you know, to be like the alpha dog on the team. So it's kind of like a situation where they need to have some trade-offs there. But Kyrie and Luka, like I said, I think it can work. The problem is that they gave up way too much to get Kyrie. And I think that just especially giving up Dorian Finney-Smith, who is a great 3-and-D guy, you know, they gave up a lot of guys, you know, they gave up some guys that are costing them on defense, because I've said it before on the show, you know, Luka can't play defense. Kyrie can't. None of those guys can play defense. And so if they can figure out a way to retool that roster during the offseason, I certainly think it can work, but you got to get some more 3-and-D guys in there.
What's interesting to me is looking at basketball and understanding how much chemistry comes into play when putting a team together. And, you know, I think there's some sports out there, like baseball being one of them, where I think you can just like literally throw really great players into the team and you're going to have success regardless of, you know, the chemistry aspect of things. Whereas I think, you know, because sports like basketball and football are so much more team oriented on requiring everyone to be on the same page at the same time, that you run into situations where it's not as simple as just like adding one great player to this roster. Cause, you know, from the outside looking in, you look at the fact they added Kyrie and you tell yourself, okay, this is a huge step in the right direction for the Mavs, but the results are showing otherwise. So obviously, you know, going into next year, things are going to have to figure themselves out a bit. They're going to have to learn how to work together a little bit better, because there's chemistry issues between them. And, you know, then you have other situations where, you know, we'll dive into this more in a second, but you know, the Phoenix Suns add Kevin Durant. He walks in, they're undefeated since he's been on the court, or with him on the court, I should say. So, I mean, that's a situation where it's like, it's just seamless in some situations. And then you have situations like with the Lakers in the past where they tried to put together basically a super team and they were missing the playoffs. I think it's fascinating to me just the way that I think certain types of personalities work together better than others. And I think we're running into that right now with Dallas, and it's just not maybe a great fit for the way Luka is looking at things and the way Kyrie wants to be at this stage in his career. But the team that I think is on the rise the most right now that we should all be thinking about is the Golden State Warriors. That is the team right now that they're getting healthy. Obviously Andrew Wiggins is back or going to be back, correct?
Yeah.
Any day now. And you add that back to the mix and you got, of course, Steph Curry, who I don't care how old he is. The guy's still the best shooter of all time. And, you know, one of the greats we've ever seen. He changed the game in a lot of ways, and some people hate that, but personally, I think he made sport more fun. But you have the Warriors here back into play where they're going to come out strong and fire in the postseason. You know, regardless of where they're seated at, they could beat anyone in the NBA. So, yeah, what are your thoughts on the Warriors, though, going forward?
I've thought from the beginning, or I will say at least since the Suns acquired Kevin Durant, I've thought from the very beginning that this is a two-horse race, no matter what. And this is obviously before Andrew Wiggins was out with the personal issues. I thought it was a two-team race. I thought you're going to see Phoenix and Golden State in the finals. And I still believe that. But I have a lot more question marks about Golden State right now than I do the Phoenix Suns, because it feels like Andrew Wiggins has been out forever. And he has. He's been out for a long time. I think he's practicing, and that's all he's doing right now.
He'll be back for the playoffs.
Yeah, Coach Steve Kerr said that he's not even going to let him onto the floor for a game until he gets a certain amount of practices in. So Golden State's only got two games left in the regular season. And so I'm not even sure that you would see an Andrew Wiggins in, like, game one, game two, game three in the first round. And so it's going to take them some time to integrate him back into the lineup. Now, right now, I mean, God forbid the season ended right now. They're playing Phoenix in the first round. That's a problem. I think Phoenix would destroy them. And so I think a lot of teams in the West, honestly, right now are trying to avoid that number five seed like the plague, because Phoenix is locked into the four seed. But with Golden State, I think, you know, they're always going to be a threat. The guys that have been playing well while Wiggins has been out, guys like Dante DiVincenzo, they've got Gary Payton II back in there, who is a really great defensive player. That's fine, but that's not something that is going to win you a championship. In order to win a championship, you've got to get Wiggins. You don't have to have him at 100%, because obviously he's probably not in basketball shape right now. But you at least have to have an Andrew Wiggins that's playing at an 85 to 90%. And so they've got to get his conditioning up to speed, and that's the most important thing right now. But other than that, Golden State's firing on all cylinders. I mean, Jordan Poole, they've been inserting him into the starting lineup. I think Clay was out. He had some back soreness in that last game. And anytime you throw Poole into the starting lineup, he responds, and he puts up a lot of points.
I haven't seen you wear your pool party shirt in a while. So,
I'm saving it, man. I'm
saving it for the postseason.
Yeah, I got to save it for, I got, you know, because we got to see what they do here. But when I look at all these other teams, I'm not afraid. Like, nobody's afraid to play Memphis, and maybe they should be, but nobody's afraid to play Denver.
Now, we've had some people who follow our show that say that Memphis, actually, it was Sacramento or Memphis, one of the two, should be the scariest team. And, you know, coming out, going into postseason.
That's probably Memphis, but certainly Denver. Nobody's afraid of Denver.
But, I mean, what's the John Morant situation looking like?
I mean, he's fine.
What is that?
I think with the John Morant situation is, like, everybody feels like, oh, my gosh, that must be such, like, a big distraction in the locker room. And I'm like, dude, give me a break. There is no distraction. The most important thing, he's back on the court and he's playing at a superstar level. And the last time I checked, he dunked over like three Portland Trailblazers the other night. And it was awesome unless you're a Trailblazers fan. I mean, it was demoralizing for them, but yeah, I mean, so Memphis, yeah, I'll give you them in the mix. But I don't think anyone really fears Sacramento. I don't think anyone really fears the Clippers or Denver or another team we're going to talk about a little bit later, which is the LA Lakers, because, you know, we don't even know how old those guys are. Are they like, are they hit 40 yet? Are they, I'm 40. I mean, I just turned 46. So, I mean, they're a little bit younger than me.
Yeah, a little bit. But I mean, I would assume with the Lakers at this point, it's at some point they had to figure it out. I mean, they've had a couple years together now. And, you know, now they're finally, it seems to be on a kind of a winning pace for the first time since the group was together. And what's going on there? I know you said you talk about it here in a few minutes, but like, obviously something chemistry wise is figuring itself out there with the Lakers. Cause when they had just the old man group, you know, last year, you know, things were not going well. So like what's changed about the Lakers this year?
Well, it's like we talked about when we always talk about addition by subtraction. So the moment that they subtracted Russell Westbrook, you guys know I love him as a player, bad fit on that team. The moment they took him off the team and they got guys like Austin Reeves, you know, Malik Beasley, Austin Reeves, Jared Vanderbilt. I mean, Austin Reeves, I feel like he's been averaging like 18 to 20 points a game these last couple of weeks. They just have a really competitive roster now, and they are playing really good defense. So that's the one thing that you could never do with Russell Westbrook getting all those minutes is defense. And right now they're a great defensive team. I don't think they're going to make like this big run. Everybody's talking about, oh, I think they can win the championship. No, that shit's not going to happen. But can they knock off a Sacramento in the first round? Absolutely. Could they knock off a Denver in the first round? I think they could. It just depends on the seeding. Right now they're sitting at number 7. They're trying to, I think the goal for all of these teams, like Lakers, Clippers, Golden State, the goal is to avoid the play-in, but also avoid the 5 seed. So I think it's like if a team has a chance to lose on purpose so that they don't have to play Phoenix in the first round, I think they'll do it. But as far as the Lakers go, I mean, the most important thing is that they're going to be competitive. And so I know a lot of us, you know, we wrote the Lakers off at the beginning of the season because they really didn't do shit last year. They were pathetic. And now it's a little bit different look to where they're going to be competitive. Now, I'm a little uncertain of what's going on right now. I've heard that AD and LeBron were both a game time decision. That might have changed by now. But I think at this point, if you're playing the Clippers, yeah, I think that game is supposed to start at 9 p.m. Central Time tonight. You've got to have all of your horses. And let me tell you why. I understand that these guys are both dealing with their right foot injuries, but you don't want to be in the play-in tournament, because what's the worst way to manage an injury? To play in the play-in tournament, because you're just playing extra games that you wouldn't have had to play if you would have just thrown all your horses out there for this game tonight against the Clippers. Now, I understand it's second half of a back-to-back, and we all know how that works in the NBA. These guys are trying to manage their injuries, their age, what have you. But in this one particular circumstance, you got to put your horses out there. And so I haven't seen the updates yet. Maybe, Mike, you can check into that. But the last time I checked, LeBron and AD were a game-time decision tonight. And I think you've got to go for it, man. I mean, if you're the 7 seed right now and the Clippers are the 6, and you are playing them tonight, especially the Clippers without Paul George, so they don't even have all of their, you know, best players right now. I think if you can figure out a way to win that game and take that number 6 seed – and get Sacramento in the first round, to me, that's the best case scenario for the LA Lakers, because they play Suns, because you're going to get destroyed. You certainly do not want to be in the play-in tournament, because you're going to get more of those right feet of AD and LeBron. So your best case is to be that number 6 seed and play Sacramento. And I think the Lakers would actually be the favorite to win that series. But to do that, you've got to take care of business tonight. And so I'll be interested to see that update.
Right here, just pulled up. So Lakers Clippers preview, which starts in 4 minutes. LeBron James, Anthony Davis, D'Angelo Russell, and Mo Bamba active for the Western Conference game. So
yeah,
so maybe, obviously they're doing what you are suggesting here, as far as, you know, putting all the horses out there, getting those guys ready. Because I mean, obviously you want to get this win out of the way to avoid potentially having to play games that you don't have to deal with down the road.
Yeah, and I know Mike, you and I talk about this a lot in sports. It could have been a smokescreen. Maybe sure, they put that out early in the day because, you know, you've got a guy sitting on the other side in Kawhi Leonard who is missing his running mate in Paul George. And, you know, maybe they wanted to put out there and say, you know, so Kawhi would look at that and say, oh, well, we can probably destroy these guys tonight. And now all of a sudden that really shouldn't happen. I mean, if you're Kawhi Leonard, yeah, you're going to put up 40, you're going to put up a 30 burger or a 40 burger tonight. That's great. But without Paul George, you're not going to win this game. Although I will say, again, second game of a back-to-back, which Lakers team are we going to see? Are they going to be drained? Are they not going to show up on defense? We don't really know. I mean, I certainly wouldn't try to put money down on this game, but I'm glad to see that they're going to put LeBron and AD out there, because it's very important that you try to win this game.
I know a certain coach, Bill Belichick, who's been notorious for smoke screens about injuries in the past. He likes to play the game that way. So I get it, man. It's all part of the game. It's all part of sportsmanship. It's all part of the strategy of psyching out the opponent. The name of the game is to win. And, you know, besides cheating, obviously, win at all costs. And so if that means you got to, like, put this news out there that, oh, these guys might miss this game, and then, you know, last minute, oh, nope, they're active, they're starting, so be it. That's the way it goes. So I mean, I'm interested to see how that one finishes up. It'll obviously be on here in the next couple hours, going on for a couple hours, I should say. So yeah, I'm looking forward to see how that one goes. And I'm surprised we're even sitting here talking about the Lakers at the moment, just because, you know, for the past couple of years, I felt like they're dead in the water, and it's been a waste of time to even bring them up, because it's, you know, just not a fun team to watch these old guys go out there and just kind of waste a bunch of time. I'd much rather, as much as we get in discussions about LeBron James and Jordan and the comparisons and all that, I would much rather see LeBron James going out there and winning games and giving me a reason to want to watch him, rather than just for the sake of watching him. You know what I mean? Now, one last team I want to talk about with you, if you're cool with it, is my Phoenix Suns, of course. My Phoenix Suns and how they're looking at the moment. Obviously, this has been a team this season who has had ups and downs. It's not been as smooth sailing as the previous couple seasons were. Ended up making a huge blockbuster trade here about 2 months ago to acquire Kevin Durant. And Kevin Durant missed some games. He missed some time with an injury right after coming over. And as I said a few minutes ago, they're 7-0 with Kevin Durant on the floor. And I just want to point out, Kevin Durant is hitting a 58% field goal percentage right now since he's become a member of the Suns. So, I mean, things are just smooth over there for Phoenix right now at the moment with him on the court. Obviously, when he's off the court, things are ugly. I mean, it's not fun. It's all or nothing. And Devin Booker, this is exactly what he needed. This is exactly the piece that Booker needed all along. And, you know, watching the Suns the years of the past couple games, the past couple of years, and, you know, obviously Chris Paul goes out there and he fails in the playoffs. I think it's been frustrating for Devin Booker. Now he's in a situation where, you know, he doesn't have to carry the team anymore, as long as Kevin's out there. So, yeah, as far as the Suns go, you know, you hit on a few minutes ago, but is this team going to be championship worthy as long as Kevin Durant's healthy?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're championship worthy, just because I've said it before on the show. I just think that the Eastern Conference teams are that much stronger defensively. And when I look at all these teams in the West, they don't, some of them play okay defense, but they don't play great defense. And I think in terms of a championship, you know, defense wins championships. And so the Suns, to me, are the favorite to win the West. And that's, you know, I don't think they can win a championship, but they should be certainly favored to win the West, because as I said a while ago, they are the number four seed. And if you're looking at all these other teams who are trying to avoid being the five seed, Well, that can mean only one thing, that their talent is they're basically the one seed. So I don't want people out there to look at Denver as being the number one seed. I know they're the number one seed on paper. That does not mean that they are the best team. It is the Phoenix Suns. And so, it'll be interesting to see moving forward. I think my biggest concern with the Suns would be depth, you know, and if I were a Suns fan, I was talking to Mike about this earlier, it pains me to look to see what Mikal Bridges has been doing on the Brooklyn Nets, because he's been tearing it up on that team. And I think when he was on the Suns, you know, he was just kind of a 3-and-D guy, but they never really kind of dug into what he could potentially be offensively. And he's just been destroying it now that he's on the Nets. And so they gave up a lot. And so that would really be my only concern with Phoenix, is the lack of depth in terms of making a deep playoff run. But I certainly think they can make the finals. Probably not going to win, because I think the Bucks or the Celtics or even the Sixers, for that matter, are just a little bit too strong. But, you know, like we always say, if you've got Kevin Durant on the floor, anything can happen. So my other concern with the Suns would be Chris Paul. I mean, his first 2 years on the Phoenix Suns, he basically shot 50% from the field. This year, for whatever reason, he's down to 43%. I know when we talk about CP3, it's always his injury history, and that's certainly always a concern. But for me, I think you're starting to finally see a decline based on his field goal percentage. Because he always shoots a high percentage from the field. And we all know that he's never been able to play defense, at least not in the last 10 years that he's been in the league. And so you got the fact that he's a defensive liability. You already gave away a great defender when you traded for Kevin Durant, when you traded away Mikal Bridges. And so little bit of concern defensively, but as we always say, the Western Conference doesn't have a whole lot of elite defensive teams. And so that's why I think Phoenix should be the favorite. But again, they make it to the finals. That's probably going to be lights out for them, because you've got three elite defensive teams over there in the Eastern Conference.
Very, very nice. Very, very nice. Well, looking forward to getting all that going underway without a doubt. And guys, I did not mean to hold out on you so long. Let's talk some Chiefs and NFL draft. Let's dig into some sleepers, because obviously, as you guys know, we've been kind of leading up. We've talked about some players here and there, and player comparisons we went over last week. And, you know, as the weeks get closer and closer to draft day, you know, I just want to sit here and basically throw some opinions out there to the Chiefs kingdom and the fans out there of some just options and players that the Chiefs should be keying on throughout the process. And, you know, this team right now, this roster, the way it's made up at the moment, is something that I think you just take best player available in a lot of ways. Obviously, the main key needs right now are wide receiver, defensive end, and probably still to add some depth to the tackle situation. But with that said, I mean, it doesn't mean that this team is incapable of literally taking whoever the best player available on the board is, which leaves the options open. I mean, they might not necessarily need a linebacker, but if one falls there, you know, go for it. Even a cornerback. We saw these awesome young corners last year step up and become huge, you know, parts and pieces of a Super Bowl run. And that doesn't mean the corners are off the table. So with that said, I have a few guys we need to talk about here for a few minutes anyway that are going to be between rounds 3 and round 7 that I want to go over with you guys, and just kind of what we see potentially being, you know, the next big, you know, sleeper of the draft, basically. And the Chiefs did a great job of that last year with Isaiah Pacheco and the additions from the safety position, corner position. You know, Brian Cook ended up playing a lot of snaps there towards the back end of the season too. So, I mean, it was awesome to watch. And Jalen Watson, who would have ever thought the Chiefs would draft a guy in the 7th round and you go out there and end up starting most of your games for you and then go to the Super Bowl and, you know, literally out there, you mean you're on an island. And you're the 7th round pick in the draft, and we just took you, and yet here we are. Brett Veach has done a phenomenal job to this point. So let's see if we can continue that momentum with the picks we have coming up in Kansas City. First one up, I want to point out to you guys, staying with the cornerbacks for a second, is DJ Turner out of Michigan. I love the fact he ran a 4.26 40 in the 40 yard dash. He's 5'11, 178. That is probably the biggest knock on him, is just a little bit on the frail side. Now, measurable wise, I mean, just the other numbers are just eye popping. He's at 38.5 vertical. His 10 yard split was a 1.47. And of course, he's got 31 inch arms. So, all that stuff's going to absolutely make an impact down the road whenever given the right circumstance with the right team. Now, obviously, the reason why this guy's not a, you know, first or second round thought is because of some of that undersize. Some of that, you know, they're worried about basically teams running his direction, bigger receivers just basically, you know, winning those contested catches against a guy like that. I'm not as worried about it. I think he's got great closing speed, and I could see him absolutely being a guy that ends up playing in the nickel a little bit starting out, you know, basically covering some of those quicker than fast receivers we see out there in the worlds. So I think DJ Turner from Michigan is going to be somebody to watch. And I mean, how can you not love a 4.26 40 yard dash? I mean, that is up there with some of the best of all time in the NFL. So that's my first one off the board. Jason, who do you have coming off first for your sleepers?
So we always like to talk about that this is going to be a deep tight end draft. And I think a lot of people are expecting, well, you know, maybe the Chiefs will take an early round tight end, and that's fine. But looking at the sleepers here, first of all, you're never going to replace Travis Kelce, okay? So we just need to get that out of our minds right now. But you can at least look for a guy that you think has potential to be a really great tight end in the NFL. And so first guy I'll throw out, tight end Zach Kuntz from Old Dominion. And I think I pronounced his name right. Is it Kuntz or is it something else?
Wait, Kuntz. So Zach Kuntz, are you sure it's not Kuntz?
Yeah. Anyway.
Well, hold on. No, remember the Royals old,
Rusty
Kuntz. But I think it was pronounced Kuntz, but
no, I mean, I think it was Kuntz. No, you're making that up.
Rusty Kuntz was his name.
I think it is.
Yeah, that's great parenting right there to name your child Rusty Kuntz.
Right.
So that's my
player.
So Zach Kuntz.
Zach Kuntz. That's your man. Sleeper
old
at the
old
tight
Dominion.
End position.
Old Dominion. Yep. Okay.
And so they say he needs to work on his technique, but he is a high upside athlete, and so eventually when we do try to replace Travis Kelce, who will never be replaced, you probably want a high upside athlete by the name of Zach Kuntz. I'll say it both ways because that means I'm right. Zach Kuntz.
It just depends on how good the player is. You know, obviously, if he's being a shithead and, you know, he fumbles the ball, he can absolutely be Kuntz at that point. But, you know, it just depends. You just got to earn the correct pronunciation, maybe. Maybe that's what you need to go about it. That's a good incentive for the player.
That's a very good incentive.
You know, we used to have Ryan Suckup on this team in Kansas City, and that's a horrible name. You know, we drafted him out of South Carolina, Mr. Irrelevant Ryan Suckup. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there that would probably get pissed off and he'd miss a field goal. Next thing you know, your name's Ryan Fuckup.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you got to earn your name.
I did call him that a few times.
But when he'd make his kicks, guess what? Now you earned your name back. Yeah. Now Ryan Suckup one more time. So yeah, I get that.
Never know. Yeah. Maybe this guy can earn it.
Yeah, it makes sense. Now here, I just want to say this real quick. This is a terrific tight end draft class, you guys. I mean, there's going to be, I think, a couple in the first round at least. But I think just overall, spread across the entire draft, there's some serious talent at the tight end position, and I would not be shocked at all if the Chiefs end up grabbing one along the way. And it's nothing at all against the current situation. Obviously, you know, Travis is still going to be Travis for hopefully another couple seasons. And I think we've liked some of the things we've seen of some of the other guys on the team. But, you know, I think that this is a great year to just say, look, let's invest a third or fourth round pick in a tight end, and you're going to get great return on that investment.
I would say the other thing with Kelce is that people don't understand, like, we've been so lucky with him because he's starting to get long in the tooth, but the guy, I feel like he's never injured. Meanwhile, you've got guys in the NFL that are injury prone from start to finish. And this guy, I mean, he's like I said, he's long in the tooth. The guy, he's always on the field.
Which is crazy.
I think we've been lucky as Chiefs fans to have him.
My number one concern after Travis was drafted, which I loved Travis Kelce at Cincinnati. I watched him. I watched tape of Travis Kelce whenever he was going pro. And there was a lot of people on Twitter at the time who were bitching and complaining and whining about taking Travis Kelce. I told everyone to chill the hell out. Like, I had actually spent time watching this guy and was super impressed. And I loved the pick when he made it. But he ended up missing his entire rookie season due to injury. And it was something that occurred in early in preseason and didn't play any snaps at all. And then goes straight into year two and then has 800 yards with Alex Smith in year two. Your first year playing in the NFL. And then from here on, you know, he's had just an incredible, 7 years in a row of 1,000 yards.
Yeah. He's basically the tight end version of
Jerry Rice.
I was going to compare him to Joe Burrow because Joe Burrow, you know, basically we thought he was going to be injury prone and then he turned into a superstar.
Sure. It's funny you went that direction with it because when you said he's the tight end version of, my first thought is Jerry Rice, which means the greatest of all time.
Yeah, no, so I know
that's my first thought.
I know, I've got recency bias. So okay. Like, I think, you know, Joe Burrow, I mean, we didn't know what the hell he was going to be. We just thought he was going to be this injury prone quarterback because he got injured.
Which he did get injured in his rookie year.
Yeah.
And he's been fine since then, obviously. But yeah, I mean, the thing with Travis is that, you know, he doesn't miss games ever. And, you know, we say that now and yeah, we could be jinxing it. I mean, the guy's about to turn 34. You know, stuff happens. It's football. And, you know, we got to hope that things go well. I hope Travis goes out and plays 1,000 snaps again this season. But at the same time, when you have a draft class in front of you like we have right now with this tight end situation, I think absolutely take one. I'm cool with Mr. Zach Kuntz, you know,
Kuntz,
whatever he's worthy of at the time,
whatever he decides to be.
I'm cool with that if you're cool with that. So, next on my list, I have Andre Carter II from Army. This dude is lanky as hell. I'm talking about arm length and everything. He is 6'7", 265 pounds. He was a linebacker technically at Army. He would be a defensive end here with the Chiefs. Here in 2021, he had 17 tackles for a loss, 14 and a half sacks on the season. And just absolutely a wrecker of the backfield. So that's the kind of guy I'd like to have. And you've got to look at those measurables and tell yourself, okay, we got the coaching staff. They can make this guy into something. And a lot of people right now have him possibly being in the second round. So maybe this guy is not as much of a sleeper as some might perceive him to be. But I still think he'd be somewhere in the third round at this point. But Andre Carter looks great to me. And last year had 7.5 tackles for loss, 3.5 sacks. So the numbers went down slightly, but he also ended up missing some time along the way too. So that's a guy to put on your radar. Watch some of his tape. He's going to be something of a force in the NFL, at least wrecking havoc. You know, obviously the Chiefs need a guy that can do it all. The Chiefs situation at defensive end at the moment, you know, the best defensive end on this roster is George Karlaftis, who tries really hard. He got better as the year went on. That's absolutely freaking awesome. I was happy to see that, but he still was a project. As I told you guys, did I not tell you guys he's a project?
Yes.
And did he also not do a damn thing for about nine or 10 weeks?
Your exact words were he is a developmental piece.
Yes. And that at that time when we drafted him, I was pissed because I did not want a developmental piece. We didn't have time for a developmental piece.
And you also could have got him probably in the second round with your second round pick. Who
See,
knows?
I've heard that there was teams after that Chiefs pick that were about to take him. But
okay. Well,
but
whatever.
With that said, I was impatient. I wanted a guy that could contribute right away. I wanted a Jermaine Johnson, you know, then going to the Jets. But at the end of the day, even though Karlaftis was a developmental piece, they won the Super Bowl anyway. So at this point, to me, everything else is gravy. At this point, let's just hope he gets better and better. And, you know, even there during that developmental period, the Chiefs won the dang Super Bowl. So at this point, that's freaking awesome. So I'm looking forward to that. He's been working with Tom Bahali during the offseason so far. But absolutely getting another D end on the other side that's going to be available and play every down is going to be important. So maybe Andre Carter at some point can be a guy that can be at least part of the rotation on the D line. So that's one of my guys I have on my list. Who's next for you?
Yeah, I like the pick, and I agree with you. I mean, it's kind of like last year we were just playing with house money because we needed to do more with that edge position, but we didn't, and we kind of got away with it. Mm-hmm. And so I hope there's a little bit – I hope that Veach will place a little bit higher priority on that edge position this year. So I certainly like your pick there. I'm going to switch over to the wide receiver position. Looking at a guy out of Stanford, Michael Wilson, 6'2", 216 pounds. We need some help at wide receiver. So we got to replace Juju. We got to get stronger at that position. We need some more threats at wide receiver. And so with Michael Wilson, he's a guy that is a sleeper because he couldn't really stay on the field. And so, but when we saw him at the Senior Bowl, he was running very crisp routes. And so I think that's something that a lot of NFL teams are going to be looking at, but I think he's a guy that you can get, you know, as a sleeper between rounds 3 through 7. And so Michael Wilson would be my pick for a wide receiver.
Yeah. These receivers this year are going to be interesting to see how they fall on the board early on. Cause right now it's a mixed bag between who is the true WR1 of this class. But so with that being now the known fact of the situation, that means the middle section of the draft and the back half of the draft is going to be full of also a mixed bag. I mean, we don't know how things are going to fall at all in this draft when it comes to wide receivers. We gotta take a stab at somebody at this point because, you know, no additions have been made. There's been no signings of Odell or DeAndre Hopkins trade yet at this point. But even if they did make a addition for a guy like Hopkins, I think you still need to add a rookie in place too. I mean, get somebody that can come in and replace Juju as a veteran, but then replace what Hardman did as well on the field as a rookie. And I think that's extremely attainable to do if the Chiefs want to make that a priority, which they could, but you're going to have to give up something as well to get a guy like Hopkins on the team. So receivers absolutely need to be a priority going into this draft. Regardless of what kind of moves they make ahead of time with any kind of veteran. So I get that for sure, man. My next one, I got a couple more DNs on my list. The next one I want to go with is was the 2022, a first team all SEC honor from, you won't believe it, Missouri Tigers. Once there was one time back in the day, Jason, you probably don't remember this.
One time back in the day, they had good players.
They were D-line U. For a while, they had Justin Smith, Alden Smith. These guys, they were putting out terrific D linemen for a long time. Sheldon Richardson, add him to the list. I'm sure I'm missing quite a few more. But Missouri was D line U at one point during the Gary Pinkel era, and they finally got another one here to come off the board. Oh, not to mention Michael Sam. You know the first, which he ended up not playing, I guess. But I thought he ended up doing something more in the NFL. Just, you know, circumstances.
Did he get blackballed? Do you think he got blackballed?
A little bit. Maybe a little bit. He got blackballed a little bit. Yeah. A little bit on that. But same time, the athleticism was also a question for Sam.
True.
But anyways, guys, Isaiah McGuire is my defensive end from Missouri. Guy's been consistent. That's what I care about as well. Coming in at 6'4", he is, what are we looking at, 260 pounds? What we're looking at with McGuire? 266 pounds. And so the last couple of years, he's had exactly 14 tackles for loss. And last year had 8.5 sacks. Year before that, had 6 sacks. So I like the fact that you kind of know what you're going to get out of this guy. And he can be had in the mid rounds. So you're not going to have to give up a ton for him as far as draft capital goes by any means. I mean, I don't think he's going to go second round. He could go third round. I mean, that's kind of the range I'm looking at right now. And I think he's going to make an impact, though. I mean, he's going to be kind of a rotational piece, but you know, he's going to be one that's going to be at least noteworthy going into the draft this year. And he's going to fit a 4-3 scheme terrifically, so that'll be perfect for the Chiefs, without a doubt. So who'd you got next on your list?
I do like the fact that you said he's going to be a rotational piece. I like that better than developmental piece. So I'm going to go with another wide receiver, Tyler Scott out of Cincinnati. The reason I like him is because he's underrated. I mean, but he runs a 4.29 40. he's proved that he can make big plays, although they didn't really use him for that for most of his career at Cincinnati. But I feel like he's maybe like a similar player to like Jalin Hyatt, to where he can run those vertical routes. And I think that's what we need. We need a big playmaker.
Yeah, so next on my list, I have a running back, as a matter of fact. I mean, we don't know the future of Clyde and what that's going to be, or Jerick McKinnon, for that matter. McKinnon's getting a little bit older. I would like to have, you know, someone come into play to, you know, help take a little bit of pressure off of our top guy. So my guy now from Pittsburgh, Israel Abanaconda is the name. This guy's the fastest running back in the draft, and it's a lot of straight line speed. So it's not the like Jamal Charles fast speed. It's more the Chris Johnson type of fast speed, if you know what I'm saying by that. So with this guy, he actually ended up leading. He ran for 1,431 yards to lead the SEC and 20 rushing touchdowns, tied for first in the FBS. So basically, this guy has somehow, I think, fallen under the radar just due to size concerns, but he's got the absolute speed. One of those guys where if he's got a hint of daylight, he's probably gone. But it's more of a one-cut-and-go type of style of running back. But I think there's a place for that in the league no matter what. So this guy, I think, will make an impact wherever he ends up. It'll be a home run threat, which is something I wanted to see more out of the Chiefs here since Jamal Charles. You know, we haven't had as much of a home run threat type of running back since him. And I think this would be the closest thing we've had since that. So I would love the addition of a guy like Israel Abanaconda from Pittsburgh. So
now his nickname must be the Anaconda, right? Because
it has to be.
Kind of what his last name sounds like.
Absolutely. It absolutely has to be. So, yeah, I mean, first of all, it's not that hard to pronounce as much as it looks like it could be, but I don't know. I think that he's going to fit well with somebody as long as he's in the right system.
So what,
he's got to be a good pass catcher.
What round do you think he's projected in right now?
Well, partially due to the positional value of him. We're looking at a fourth round pick for him at this point. So I think that's going to make an impact a lot, is the positional value of just the fact he's a running back. Cause you right now, you obviously have the Bijan Robinson, be the first running back off the board from Texas, and then after that it'll probably be Jahmyr Gibbs from Alabama, but he probably won't go till either very, very late first or second round. So don't be surprised at all if Gibbs doesn't go till second round, and then you see a couple other running backs trickle off, you know, in the third round, and next thing you know, you got a guy who runs a, you know, in the 4.2s out there freaking going in the fourth round. So just something to keep an eye on, I would say.
Yeah, I would love to see that. I mean, I would love to see a home run hitter at that running back position for the Chiefs. Another running back I'm looking at is Dwayne McBride out of UAB. And he's the reason I like him is because he's a creative runner. He consistently finds ways to avoid tackles. He had 175 broken tackles at UAB. He's got good size at 5'11", 215 pounds. And so you can never have enough depth at the running back position. And so we all love Isaiah Pacheco. He's amazing. But again, like Mike was alluding to, you know, if we don't have McKinnon, if we don't have Clyde, what are we going to do for depth? And so that's the guy I'm looking at the running back position late.
Right. And those out there wondering, if you didn't notice, Ronald Jones signed with the Dallas Cowboys. So, I mean, he's gone. Not that he wanted to be here anyway, after having to sit out a whole year, basically. But I also think that when it comes to the running back position, like youth is a virtue at this point. Like, you want to have young guys at that position and also create competition. Not that we need to necessarily push Pacheco, but it's the healthiest thing in the world for running backs to be in competition mode for each other, because these guys get about one contract in their life. That's it. I mean, they're playing for that one contract that's going to give them, you know, in the millions and, you know, maybe 3 to 4 years. Like, that's what they're looking for, because after that, you know, as soon as you start hitting 29, 30 as a running back, it's game over. So basically, you got your rookie deal, then you got your one big one, and from there on, after that one's over, I mean, you're about done. And so, obviously, that's what these guys are gearing towards. So, clearly, I mean, you want to be on the field playing the most, making the most explosive plays, and getting your opportunity for that next contract around the whenever that comes along. But yeah, I mean, I just think it would be awesome to have a dynamic duo at running back, especially if the Chiefs end up in a situation where the receivers are not up to par. You know, maybe you got to go in with the idea that the Chiefs are going to be full of two tight end sets, maybe three tight end sets a lot this coming season, and, you know, less receivers out there. Well, hell, just add some more running backs too. You know, add some more explosive running backs that can make a difference in the receiving game. And I think your guy right there would make a big impact as well. So I like that one.
So you like young guys or running back? Are you saying you don't want Ezekiel Elliott on the Chiefs? Is he still floating?
No, I will pass on the Elliott situation. Right. That is, see, he had about.
I heard the teams were lining up to get him.
See, Zeke had about three or four pretty solid years. After that, it's been all downhill. I mean, it runs. It's like Le'Veon Bell. It's like the fall off is so freaking fast that it just hits you like a ton of bricks with these running backs. It's like, you know, you're thinking to yourself one day that, oh my God, he's the best thing I've seen since Adrian Peterson. And next thing you know, just going into year four, all of a sudden it's like, who is this person?
I thought it was hilarious with him that he basically thought it, for one day he thought he was Aaron Rodgers, because he said, well, I'm going to give you my choices. These are the three teams that I'll play for. Like, dude, are you a quarterback? Are you a really, really good running back? Like, who the hell are you, dude? Putting out your three choices of teams that you want to play for. Is he really that far away from reality that he doesn't understand that his skill set has gone into the shitter?
It's a lot of weed and delusion coming from Zeke Elliott right there. So,
well, I like weed and delusion, but not as an NFL football player.
Right. Okay, next on my list, I have another DN for you guys. This guy right here has actually kind of become one of my favorite players in the draft, and I might be not doing this properly. This guy might end up in the second round because he fits the picture of what a second rounder should be. But regardless, I want him on the Chiefs no matter what, and I have Zach Harrison as my next choice. So this guy right here, 6'6", 271. He is a Carlos Dunlap clone. He is basically the exact same player as Carlos Dunlap. Now, imagine Carlos Dunlap, instead of being, you know, 35 years old, being 25 years old. Well, you know, everyone, Dunlap, when he was with the Bengals, was a badass. I mean, everyone loved Carlos Dunlap with the Bengals. And that's what you're going to be getting from a guy like Zach Harrison. Fits the mold, also creates tons of turnovers, somehow just gets his hands on freaking every ball that comes out there. And, you know, stops the run just as well as he rushes the passers. So, yeah, he's not going to be the guy that goes out and gets you, you know, Chris Jones numbers like sacks, like, you know, 15 sacks or whatever. It's probably not going to be him, but he'll probably get you 8 or 9 sacks every single season, as well as, you know, 15 TFLs, which I'll take that any day. So Zach Harrison's my guy from Ohio State. And if you guys have not checked him out, 100% check out more of his footage online. And I think you guys will like him as well. So I think he could be a second round pick, but I'm assuming he's going to go to the third. So that's my spot for him. So who else do you have?
That was all I had. I do like your pick, though. I mean, if we can get a guy like that sometime in the second round, I think it's definitely worth a second round pick.
That's going to depend, because, like, you know, if the Chiefs go into this draft, pick 31 overall, and one of the receivers they like falls to them at that point, then at that point, second round, I would really hope it's either a tight end or a defensive end,
right,
for that second round pick. Just because I, you know, obviously not the tight ends I need by any means, but there's so many good ones. You want to get one kind of early in this class, but then the D end aspect, there's going to be some guys that are going to stand out. It's a matter of who's going to fit the mold of what the Chiefs like to do. And Brett Veach typically has shown that he likes bigger sized D ends so far in his time with the Chiefs. So that tells me someone like a Zach Harrison would fit the mold, being, you know, 6'6", 271. Or whereas, you know, getting a guy like B.J. Olajari, who's coming in at 6'3", 240 pounds, some of those more undersized guys just don't seem to be the style. I mean, I think we're trying to avoid getting another D Ford on this roster. D Ford was an awful run defender. I mean, one of the worst run defenders I've seen from a DN position ever. He had some pressure, of course. I mean, he could get to the quarterback a little bit here and there. But I think we're trying to get a all-around complete football player, which is what Zach Harrison is. I think it's more the style of what we got right now. And I think also having a guy like Steve Spagnuolo as our defensive coordinator goes a long ways too, because, you know, he can dial up all these awesome different blitz designs to get to the quarterback where you don't necessarily need it to come each time from the edges. So as long as you get guys that are there that are solid pieces to that puzzle that are going to be there and make impacts and get stuffs on the run game and, you know, come up with 8 or 9 sacks per season, I think that's just good enough for what this defense needs at the moment. So, what else you got on your mind, man? We got a couple minutes left.
You know, at one point, the Clippers-Lakers game, the Clippers were up 15-3 start the game. Still pretty early in the first. It's 25-23 Clippers, so we'll keep our eye on that. Dallas Mavs, man. You know, what happens usually when we talk shit on teams on this show, they start to play better. And Dallas, they got a chance, man. They're not out of it yet. It is 111-107, 6 minutes left in the fourth. And they're playing Sacramento. So if they can find a way to beat Sacramento Kings, I mean, that goes a long way. But we'll see what happens there.
Yeah, very nice. Looking forward to checking that out. I think, did the Royals win today? I mean, is that did they finish that thing off? I don't know. I must have missed the update on the Royals game. So I have no idea. I felt bad.
They lost.
Oh, 3-0. Well, of course, it's Greinke pitching. So
right. Why would you want to give him run support?
Don't give him any run support at all. Guys, I went to opening day last week, and it was just, like, sad because, you know, I was excited to get to go to the game and watch Zach Greinke again because I've, you know, growing up, it's kind of funny to say this, growing up, you know, 2004, I was 14 years old and got to watch Zach Greinke play. You know, his first few starts there in the early days were awesome. And got to be a part of that. And now seeing him back again as a Royal and actually doing well, I mean, this is not a situation like Joaquin Soria. This is a situation where, like, this guy came back to the Royals and is actually pitching terrifically once again. And yet the offense never does anything for him. You know, they never give him any run support at all. This game, once again, was freaking 2 hits again. Guys, that's the exact same amount of hits that they had on opening day. So Zach Greinke has now pitched 2 really, really good games. Royals gave him a total of 4 hits and 0 runs.
Yeah, you know, I heard the Royals were going to try to focus a lot on pitching development this year. Maybe they're focusing too much, and they're just kind of letting the hitting go to shit. I mean, I am excited to go to a few games this year because of the way that they are working with these pitchers and the new management regime. And so I'm excited to see how the development is going to get better with our new management. And but, you know, we're not going to win anything this year, but I would like to see progress. And I think that's what all Royals fans are looking for this year. Just show me some progress. And I think the hitting, you know, at least to a certain extent, we've got some good young hitters. They should be able to turn that around at some point.
Yeah, at some point it'll be hot and cold all year. But it's frustrating whenever, you know, Zach Greinke went 4-9 last year and pitched great all year long. So anyways, guys, I could go on all day about that, but it's just it's frustrating to watch, and as a fan of Greinke, as far as a pitcher that he is and player he's been and clearly has some kind of commitment to the city to want to return once more. I just hope we can find a way to do him better is all.
I'm just glad it came back. I mean, you got a guy that's looking to, I mean, he wants to go in as a Royal into the Hall of Fame.
Right.
So we don't have any Hall of Famers outside of George Brett. That's it. So if we to get another guy like Zach Greinke into the Hall of Fame is going to be amazing. But yeah, I hope that he'll be around at least for, you know, this year and next, and hopefully we can at least be a little bit competitive going into next year. Probably not so much this year.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it all unfolds. All right, guys. Well, we'll be back once again, of course, next week. Looking forward to that. Absolutely. I'll be going to Vegas next week after the
Vegas
show. Going to be getting a little crazy out there for the Sisters 21st. And, guys, I'm super pumped for the Tuesday before the draft. We're going to be live at Limitless Brewing Company in Lenexa, Kansas. setting up shop. Tanner will be there, of course, with us, and we're just gonna be hanging out, having some great beers. Dave and Emily, the owners out there at Limitless, are going to be so nice and kind to have us out there to hang out. And we're going to have speakers. You guys can hear us talk. You guys can ask questions. And we're going to have an open mic, from what I hear, to anyone who wants to come up and speak with us, really, they can. So that's going to be an awesome, awesome time over there at Limitless in Lenexa, Kansas, right here. It's a 95th and Dice Lane. So basically 95th and between Flum and Lackman is the location of this brewery. So with all that said, you guys, looking forward to next week. Tanner should be back with us once again. We'll be back at the main Sports Buffoons Hub location. And yeah, it's time to go get drunk, I guess. So guys, I will see y'all on the next one.
Outro.